It's the Amazing Rico Bronya Podcast with your host, Evan Roberts.
Yeah! Whoa! Welcome to Rico Bronya. The New York Mets are one win away from the National League Championship Series. We are recording at a very special location. We are recording live from the WFAN studios. For those watching on YouTube, it looks like we're on a TV set. Trust me, it's not that cool. It's just a giant performance space. It's where we had our watch party about a week ago when the Mets won game 161. And we had a little viewing party here ourselves. We were on the radio at 5 o'clock, so I was not lucky enough to be in the building the way a lot of you guys were. And then afterwards, we came into this space, me, the great Pete Hoffman, the sort of great positive Tommy Lugauer, and we watched the final five innings together like a family. And so whether you were at the game and you're in your car right now, or you're waking up in the morning, or you're watching live and you weren't at the game, we all have that same feeling. The feeling of joy. The feeling of, wait a second, did the New York Mets just win a playoff game in which they didn't make us sweat our balls off? Did they pull that off? Did they do that? They did. Our tribal chief, our ace, I'll call him an ace after this performance, the great Sean Manaea. Sean, what a freaking performance. And I didn't think it was going to go that swimmingly because early in this game, granted, we were doing a radio show and I was so not distracted talking about Robert Sala and Jazz Chisholm and God knows what other crap we were talking about for an hour. But he was getting hit hard. Like, you go back to the first batter of the game, I thought the first batter of the game was a bad warning sign. It was Kyle Schwarber. And remember, Manaea got ahead of him. I think he got a few swing and misses. And then Schwarber started fouling ball off after ball off after ball off. And I'm starting to sweat. I'm starting to panic. I think everybody at Citi Field was just so gassed up that we had a postseason game, a real postseason game for the first time in 9 years, because we don't count that crap that we saw 2 years ago. And Kyle hit the ball about 400 feet when Manaea finally got him out. And there was a sigh of relief, but a little bit of a worry. And then Trey Turner ripped one to shortstop. And then Bryce Harper ripped one to shortstop. So it was, I would even call this, for anyone who's been watching the Yankees as well, a Gerrit Cole first inning. Remember his first inning against Kansas City? A lot of hard contact, a lot of warning signs, but okay, he got through it. And the hope was, and I even said this to Tiki during one of the commercial breaks, because in the second inning, it was sort of the same thing. Nick Castellanos hit one of the warning track. Mark Vientos made this incredible play on an Alec Bohm grounder, and then he hit JT Realmuto when he was ahead in the count. And so it was a relatively shaky first two innings in which there were warning signs. But I said to Teek, I said, here's the thing about aces, if you want to believe that Sean Manaea is an ace. And after tonight, I do. You got to get to them early. Because once they settle in, once they figure out whatever issues they've had early, they settle in, they cruise, and they dominate. And to the credit of Sean Manaea, the third inning was a little shaky too. But in the fourth inning, in the fifth inning, he went to work. Then he gets into trouble in the sixth inning, puts a couple of guys on base. And this was probably Sean Manaea's most impressive moment. He strikes out Bryce Harper with 2-1 and nobody out. The hard contact double play, but a little bit of luck when Castellanos hits the ball right at Iglesias. But Manaea settled down after a couple of innings in which there was a lot of hard contact and puts together this utterly brilliant performance, but he needed runs. So all of you, and you know who you are, all of you Rico listeners who decided to besmirch the name of the great Pete Alonso, who decided we should trade Pete Alonso. Pete Alonso's a cancer in the locker room. Pete Alonso's a big doofus. Pete Alonso is whatever.
That's Pete Hoffman, by
MVP,
the way.
MVP, baby! MVP! You questioned him. Can he handle the big spot? Listen, I'll never pretend that I've been positive the whole way. I haven't been. That's positive Tommy's gimmick, and he has it. But the one thing I've remained steadfast on is that I know Pete Alonso's better than this shit that we saw most of this season. I apologize for cursing. I'm pumped up. I also have a lot of built-in adrenaline because I wasn't at Citi Field. I'm very jealous of everybody. But Pete Alonso reminded you. It took a while, but Pete Alonso reminded you in Game 3 against the Brewers of what he's capable of when he hit one of the most majestic home runs in the history of the franchise. So think about this, Met fans. Think about anybody who's questioned Pete Alonso. It is the first Met home playoff game. It is their first home game in 2.5 weeks. Pete Alonso walks through that door. He gets a standing ovation. It is the second inning of a 0-0 game in a 1-1 series with the Philadelphia Phillies. And I was on the air, so you may have to correct me. In fact, look this up, Hoff.
What's up?
First pitch to Pete Alonso. Was it the first pitch or the second pitch? My scorebook says first pitch, okay? But again, I'm scoring a game while on the radio. How accurate was I? So for the sake of this, until Pete either corrects me or confirms it, on the first pitch, Pete Alonso hits the absolute crap out of a ball from his son, Aaron Nola. That's right. Pete owns him. He deposits it well into the seats in right field. It was for an opposite field home run, I'd call it a moonshot. And that's how Pete Alonso returns home to Citi Field.
First pitch.
First pitch. That's right. Don't question the scorecard, even if I'm on the radio while I'm doing it. On the first pitch, that goofy, lovable, dopey, very rich son of a bitch puts one over the right field seats. And I don't want anyone to forget that. Don't forget that about Pete Alonso, because there's going to be a lot of stories told about Pete Alonso and what's happened during this postseason run. And obviously, game three is the headline. The Mets are done. Their season's over. They're about to bow out in horrible fashion to the Milwaukee Brewers in a playoff series that still doesn't even feel like the playoffs. And Pete Alonso delivered probably the clutchest home run in the history of the New York Mets. But let's never forget that in game three, with the series tied at one, in a 0-0 game, Pete Alonso brought the freaking house down with an opposite field home run. Credit to our guy, Pete Alonso. And let it be said, and I understand he can slump. He may not get another hit for the rest of the postseason. I cannot tell the future. But let us never forget what Pete Alonso is capable of. And I'm not going to make any comments about his future or his contract, because we got a lot of time to worry about that. Hopefully we've got weeks to worry about that. But Pete Alonso has reminded all of us what he is capable of. That was a massive home run. And then let me get to Jesse Winker. So Jesse Winker almost brought me out of my seat two batters later, when also on the first pitch after Iglesias had that single, pummels one to right field. I thought off the bat it was gone. I thought Jesse Winker had delivered a two-run home run and the roof was going to cave down on the overrated, overpaid Aaron Nola. But unfortunately, Nicholas Castellanos made a very nice catch in right field, a leaping catch, so the ball wasn't going to get out. And you could see that on the transfer, the ball plopped out of Castellanos' hand. Again, live on the air as this happened, I tried to describe it for a few minutes. Sean Moraz very nicely said, "Evan, this is terrible radio. Please move on." I thought that was a douchey comment. Would you ever do that, Pete?
Never.
Never. He would never say to BT and Sal, "Hey, this is boring. Move on." But Sean, I still love you, bro. Kind of hurt my feelings, but I get it. But the point is, by the way, I listened back. Horrible radio. Sean was right. So I'll give that to him. But you could see he was on the transfer. And so I'm watching this live. A lot of you guys are at the game. Some of you watching live as well. And what I was worried about was what would happen to Iglesias. Like, you can't call this a double play, because Iglesias clearly is holding up, asking the umpire, "Hey, is this a transfer play? You know, you're saying it's a base hit. I got to go to second base. I got to make sure I'm safe." So it really put the base runner in a terrible spot. I give baseball credit, because they made it right, and they also avoided a mistake. Like, turning that into a double play would have been a baseball travesty. Calling it a base hit would have been the wrong call. I'll be the first to tell you. So giving it an out, putting Iglesias back on first base, was just common sense. And I appreciate common sense. I think sometimes in sports, we don't have a lot of it. So I'm really glad, because it could have been a big moment in the game, which is probably why I was harping on it on the radio for a few minutes, because I didn't know. Like, my first reaction is, if this turns into a double play, this could turn into a really killer moment for the New York Mets. Fortunately, umps got it right. Mets couldn't score any runs after that inning, but it was all good because Pete Alonso hit that massive home run. Winker, a few innings later, hits that bomb that gives him a 2-0 lead. Jesse Winker, for whatever reason, has a thing for these big moments. He has a thing for pissing off crowds. He has a thing for getting fans of the other team to hate him. He did that to us brilliantly for years. The other thing Jesse Winker clearly has is this knack for the big moment. And it's why Mendy ultimately made the right decision starting Winker over JD. Both guys did not have good career numbers against Aaron Nola, so there wasn't a great option. There were a few emails to the Rico mailbag in which people suggested starting Luis Angel Acuna, thinking, hey, if JD doesn't have good numbers, if Wink doesn't have good numbers, why not give Acuna a rare playoff start? Like, why not? Let's see what he can do. I still like the idea of trusting this guy in a big spot. He started to prove that. And Jesse Winker's home run to turn a 1-0 game into a 2-0 game was absolutely monumental. The other thing is, going back to Manaea, was that sixth inning. Sixth inning, they're up in this game 2-0. He puts the first two guys on base, and the first two guys he puts on base with walks is Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner. For Sean Manaea to make the pitches he made, those sweepers, I think he threw three in a row to get Bryce Harper out on three pitches or four pitches. There may have been a foul ball mixed in there to strike him out, was huge. The Castellanos at-bat was great. He got ahead of him. And then 0-2. Nick Castellanos scares the crap out of me, no matter what the count is. And he proved that in game two when he was behind in the count 1-2 to McGill. And it was a hanging slider that they hit the crap out of and put in the left field. But he's ahead of him 0-2. And Nick hit the daylights out of that ball. I thought it was going in a right field. Luckily, it was right at Iglesias and turned into a double play. The other thing is with this offense, they get the two solo home runs. It's 2-0. Enough can't be said about the absolute clutchness in the sixth inning from Starling Marte. Go back to the sixth inning. It's a 2-0 game. Nobody feels comfortable. Everybody's nervous, especially knowing, hey, when's Sean coming out of the game? I mean, at that point, Manaea's pitch count was only 80 after six. So I think they even suggested it on the broadcast, like, does he come out for another inning? And we're all here like, are you freaking kidding me? Of course he's coming out for another inning. He's thrown 80 pitches in six innings. And he finished an inning strong. You at least let him start the seventh inning and you go batter by bat, by batter. That was at least my thought. Because, yes, the last batter made the hard contact. That was the Castellanos double play. But we were all in agreement, right? But I had to come out for the seventh inning, pitching out of eight. Yeah, we're all universal on this. But getting runs was going to be so important. And you go back to that seventh inning. They put together, or that sixth inning, I should say, they put together a beautiful bases-loaded, nobody-out spot. You've got Vientos coming through with a base hit. You've got Brandon Nimmo giving you this awesome at-bat against Nola. And then Pete Alonso. Here's the thing about Pete. He hits the home run. We did the diatribe about that. That at-bat against Aaron Nola was an incredible at-bat. He showed such great poise, laying off close pitches, close changeups. Pete Alonso made a decision. If I'm not getting the pitch I want, I'll do what I did two innings earlier and strike out looking. I am not going to chase to Aaron Nola's pitches that I don't think I can hit. He put together an outstanding at-bat. He drew the walk. They're set up with the bases loaded. They get Aaron Nola out of the game. Iglesias hits that ground ball to second that Sosa doesn't play cleanly. Unfortunately, Mark Vientos is slow as molasses, and he's thrown out at the plate. And then Jesse Winker, unfortunately, hits a pop-up to left that doesn't go far enough, and Nimmo can't score from third. At that point in the game, honest conversation, if they don't score and it goes to the top of the seventh inning, 2-0 game, after the momentum get of the Phillies holding the Mets with bases loaded, nobody out, I'll tell you right now, I feel sick about this game. I'm not sure we win. I'm not sure how Mendy even manages it with a 2-0 lead. I'm not sure if Manaea, who put together the easiest, cleanest seventh inning in the world, I don't know if the same thing happens if it's 2-0. Starling Marte. Who has been here for a bunch of years. We've talked more about his groin and his hammy and all the different injuries that this man has had over the years he's been here. How freaking money has he been during the postseason? He's gotten a lot of big hits. And in this spot, I can make the argument this was the biggest that he got, because I really felt not scoring with the bases loaded and nobody out in the sixth inning had a chance to be our death sentence, had a chance to be a really bad moment in this game. And Starling Marte comes through, rips the base hit to center field, and just gives us all this chance to relax, this chance to breathe. And I will admit, I don't sit here watching these games thinking positively the entire time, thinking we're going to win, envisioning a game four with the Mets up 2-1. when Marte got that base hit, it was the first time in which my butt cheeks could relax, in which I can uncleanse a little bit, sit back and say, okay, I feel good about winning this baseball game. Massive, massive hit by Starling Marte. And look, what helped is that, as I mentioned, Manaea comes out for the seventh inning and he threw like five pitches. I mean, he had the easiest seventh inning in the world with a 4-0 lead. He comes out for the eighth, which again, same thing. The pitch count is relatively low. You're thinking about there's a game tomorrow. Edwin Diaz has thrown a million pitches over the last week. So you're trying to maximize your starter. And I'm with you on this with Manaea, especially after such a quick, easy seventh inning to let him start the eighth. Unfortunately, he gives up that leadoff hit to Edmundo Sosa, which was really a bad break. Manaea did not give up hard contact. And then Mendy makes the decision to pull him. So where I'm at on that is I'm now thinking I need to make sure that if the Phillies start to rally at this point, and look, they could. I mean, at this point, it's a 6-0 game because they scored two more runs. I'm trying to remember now. Yeah, in the seventh inning, they scored the runs on the Jose Iglesias big hit, which I left out. I apologize. In the bottom of the seventh inning, it was kind of same. They put together the two-out rally with a bunch of walks. Nimmo and Alonso, same thing. And then Iglesias came through with the huge two-run single. I don't want to forget that to make it 6-0. But at 6-0, I'm still thinking, hey, Phillies could put a rally together. I got to make sure Edwin Diaz is on the mound. So I'm playing the counting game. And the counting game tells me if I go to my bullpen and I got the three-batter minimum, and I've got a 6-run lead, and there's a runner on first, I've got to always make sure that if three batters later the tying run comes to the plate, I go to Edwin Diaz. I'm not stuck on the mound with anybody else in this bullpen, no offense to them. And I know Diaz, a lot of Met fans may not trust him. I'm not saying he's got the fullest of trust, but he's their best reliever. I think that's one thing we could all agree on. He's still the guy you want on the mound. So when Manaea gives up the leadoff hit, I'm doing the counting game. He goes to Phil Maton. Maton gets an out, walks a guy. Then he gives up. He walks a guy, and then he gets an out on the comebacker. So what I'm thinking right now is at 6-0 with two on and two out. Hear me out on this. Tell me if this is too confusing, Pete.
All right, let's go.
You got to take him out there because if you go to someone else, which was Stanek warming up, and Stanek implodes, I got to have the insurance policy of Diaz coming into the game before the tying runs at the plate. So think about this. Mendy lets Maton face one more batter, gives up a base hit. It's now 6-1. There's first and second. He gives up. He goes to Stanek, takes Maton out. Fine. Do the three batter game. If Castellanos gets a hit, which he does, Bohm gets a hit, which he didn't, and then Realmuto would have come up as the tying run.
Yeah.
You see what I'm saying? So my problem was, it's a first world problem critique because it's 6-1 and you're still confident. I got to make sure I get Maton out quick enough where if I go to another reliever and all three guys get on base, then I can go to Edwin Diaz. So the mistake Mendy made, in my opinion, is Maton should have come out after he got Trey Turner to ground out, because I know you're thinking about saving bullpen arms and not going to Diaz. I'm thinking about the insurance policy of Diaz. So if you go to Stanek one batter earlier and all three guys get on base, Diaz comes in with the tying run at the plate. If Stanek, after he gave up the hit to Castellanos, gives up a base hit to Alec Bohm, tying runs at the plate. Batters JT Realmuto, you're stuck with Ryan Stanek. I think I explained that well.
Good job.
So that was my bullpen management thought. As that was happening in the eighth inning, like break glass in case of emergency, how do I make sure that if the Phillies do put a rally together, Edwin Diaz comes into this game and he has a chance to put the fire out? Granted, Edwin has given us a lot of moments this season where maybe you don't trust him. But to me, David Peterson is the only other guy that I would throw in there because he did such a good job in that wild card game, a wild card series game three. And he obviously did a good job as the bulk arm after Kodai Senga, where I think Peterson has to be a big factor out of the bullpen. I really do. I understand that you may think of him as the bulk guy after Senga in a potential game five. I think you've got more options in a game five. And I think David Peterson could be that. I'm not saying he should be throwing five innings out of the bullpen, but I think Peterson to get a big out or to pitch an inning has to be on the table. With that said, Edwin Diaz is still that guy as of now in this game that you trust the most out of the bullpen. But luckily, they didn't have to use him. And luckily, after Stanek got that out to get through the eighth inning, there was a relaxed feel. Now, the ball was hit hard. It was hit out right at Harrison Bader. But nevertheless, there was that relaxed feel of, okay, I think we got this. I think we'll be able to win this game without sweating out the ninth inning too much. And luckily, that was the case. Ryan Stanek comes out, pitches a 1-2-3 ninth inning, and we have ourselves a nice, clean, and tidy 6-2 victory, and we're one win away from the National League Championship Series. It was how'd you feel, Pete? Come on over here. Pete Hoffman, ladies and gentlemen. I think the camera we have set up is so awkward that it's tough for us to both be in the shot.
No. Here so this is perfect.
He's sitting behind me if you're watching everybody on YouTube. How you feeling, Pete?
Dude, so first of all, a couple questions that the audience wants to know. Are you okay with Edwin Diaz maybe resting a little bit longer or keeping him on a regular, like, because one of the things is if being active, he's usually better. But now it's going to be a couple days that he's pitched. Even tomorrow, if we don't need him, is it better to kind of just, like, give him as much rest as possible?
I think tomorrow, thinking ahead already, because we're in a great spot where we know there's a game five or there's another game. Like, either the NLCS starts or we have to play a winner-take-all game five on Friday. I would think that Diaz, having multiple days off, you can use him tomorrow, and you probably should use him tomorrow because he is better with work. Obviously, you don't want to let it turn into a 30-pitch performance. But I also think the game's going to dictate it. I mean, if you're smelling blood in game four, you got to take it. Right. You got to manage this game as if we don't want to go back to Philadelphia. So if you're asking me, hey, they're down 6-1, do you go to Diaz to keep them fresh because it would be too much time off? Probably. I think you got to talk to the player too. I mean, Edwin, I guess, made comments recently that he feels he made mechanical changes during the off day. But as far as the workload is concerned, I don't know. I'm trying to think ahead now. Like, if he doesn't pitch tomorrow, you're talking about 1-3 days without pitching. I don't know. He's thrown so many pitches over the last week that maybe that's best for him. But honestly, let's worry about that when that's a problem. Because the hope is they've got a lead. They're trying to close the game out. By the way, one thing we need to do is we're recording this right after the game. Has Rob Thomson officially said it's Ranger Suarez for game five, game four, or would he consider Zach Wheeler on short rest?
I will look that up. But right now, I mean, for them, they have to go Zach Wheeler, don't they? He's your best pitcher.
So here's what makes this thing complicated. I'm trying to think about this two ways. If, like, I'm a Philly fan, I probably would pitch Zach Wheeler because my thought would be I can't let my season end with my best pitcher only pitching once. And even though he's never done 3 days rest, just for the record, I already looked this up. He's never pitched on 3 days rest. The only thing he's done is he's pitched out of the bullpen on 2 days rest, which I don't know if that's the same thing. Like, coming out of the bullpen in game seven of the NLCS on 2 days rest is far different than making a start on 2 or 3 days rest. But as good as Suarez has been, I still probably would lean towards starting Zach Wheeler. But here's the crazy part as a Met fan. I think I want the Phillies to start Zach Wheeler. What I mean? Like, and that's weird because you think about it from what does the other team want or what does the other team want? What is the fan base afraid of? Like, to me, I want a compromised Zach Wheeler, and I want the insurance policy that if he does deliver the way Kershaw did on 3 days rest against the Mets in game four in 2015, we are facing someone who isn't Zach Wheeler on full rest, which would mean probably Ranger Suarez or Christopher Sanchez. They could come back with him on regular rest.
Well, they hit Christopher Sanchez, and not for nothing, Ranger Suarez, I know in the beginning of the season, was pretty lights out, but he hasn't been that great to end the season, and that just is a sign of a guy that's tired.
No,
comfortable with that.
Let's go. Well, let's see. Well, when Rob Thompson, check out if Rob Thompson's met the media on that. Obviously, the bet decision is very simple. Jose Quintana will try to eliminate the Phillies in game four. Game five is a mixed bag, and obviously right now, like, as Met fans, we don't want to think about a game five. We want to hope a game five never happens. But in the back of my mind, I kind of lean towards Senga, Severino, and Peterson as my three major weapons in a game five, assuming they don't use a lot of David Peterson in game four. I said that before. I would absolutely make him a bullpen factor in game four, big out, Bryce Harper, seventh inning, because who knows what Jose Quintana looks like in this game. I don't know if he's going to give us a Tribal Chief Shawn Manaea kind of performance, but one can only hope. Quintana's obviously been great recently, put together the scoreless streak, threw a hell of a game in a game three against Milwaukee. Quintana, you never know. Maybe he delivers a performance like that. But I do like the idea of Peterson being a weapon out of the bullpen in game four. And then in game five, he probably wouldn't be a bulk guy if he pitches in game four. But why couldn't he be available? There's an off day between four and five. So I don't think it eliminates the possibility of Peterson being available. But I think that Senga, Severino, Peterson are like the three different weapons you're going to throw at the Phillies in a potential game five. Obviously, game four is all about Jose Quintana. And look, we have a mixed history in this divisional series. We win every division series, but sometimes we've had to go back to a game five on the road like 2015. But in 2000 and in 1999, this franchise was able to close it out in a game four. And those were incredibly memorable moments. Against Arizona, it's just Todd Pratt hitting a walk-off home run to send the Mets to the NLCS. Against the Giants, it's Bobby Jones throwing maybe the greatest pitching performance in the history of the New York Mets, a one-hit complete game shutout to send the Mets to the NLCS. And obviously game five wasn't a game four, was the Jacob deGrom balls of stone, Jairus Familia six-out victory in Los Angeles, Daniel Murphy doing amazing things. The other NLDS we were in, we all forget about, that was the sweep of the Dodgers in 2006, which honestly, does anybody remember anything about that series other than two guys score, Paul LaDuca tagging two guys out at the plate in game one? Like, that's literally it. I'm trying to think, like, El Duque got hurt, so he couldn't pitch, and then we swept the L.A. Dodgers in three. And when they beat the Dodgers in game three in L.A., it was the same day the Yankees got eliminated by the Tigers. Those are the memories of that DS. It's a very forgettable, good forgettable, but forgettable DS. Obviously, this one, this has been a war. We know about what happened in game one. We know about what happened in game two. This was actually the only comfortable victory they've had. But I warn you about the Phillies. I'll do this now. I would have said this to you in the middle of game two. I have a lot of respect for them. I may not have a lot of respect for their fans or the talk show hosts on the other radio station in Philly. Those guys I may not respect. But the Philadelphia Phillies are a very good baseball team. Zach Wheeler is a legitimate ace. Bryce Harper, a legitimate stud. Nick Castellanos scares the crap out of me. Like, the Phillies are legit. They are the most talented team in baseball, in my humble opinion. They also aren't going to go down easily. We saw that in game two. Mets are up 3-0. They're making it look easy. Sevy's dominating. But in the back of my mind, I remembered what they did last year and really what they did a year before that in 2022 when they came out of nowhere and they got to a World Series. I do not believe this team is just going to be easy to beat. Like, the one thing I don't think is going to happen is we're going to have a party in game four. I hope I'm wrong. I hope they do go down meekly for a myriad of reasons, not only because it'll make our lives less stressed, but because those fans in Philly, they will turn on this team the way they've turned on the Sixers. Like, think about this. There's a reason why New Yorkers invaded the Wells Fargo Center as easily as they did in the Knicks-Sixers series, because Sixer fans hate the Sixers. They don't like that team. They know Joel Embiid is a dirty stiff. They love this Philly team. What we have a chance to do by beating them, especially beating them convincingly in game four, is to take all those frauds and have them take their knives out and stab it right into the back of Kyle Schwarber and Trey Turner and Nick Castellanos, all the hired guns, which is all what they are. The Phillies are a bunch of hired effing guns. That'll get the city to turn on them, but more importantly, because we're going to win. Like, the Phillies are so nameless and faceless. Our company asked us, I'm going to admit this, I apologize. Our company said, do you want to do a joint RICO with the Phillies version of what we do? And by the way, I'm sure those guys are great guys. I'm sure they do a great podcast. I don't mean to knock them. I could give two craps about doing a podcast with the city of Philadelphia because no one cares about them. Like, honestly. Like, and I don't mean that as disrespect. They shouldn't care about us. They do because we're the big city. I don't care about Philadelphia. They are a nameless, faceless opponent. The only reason it was so exciting was that the travel's easy.
Like, who doesn't mind traveling only 2 hours to go to a game? When we beat the Phillies, if we beat the Phillies, let me go with. If we beat the Phillies, it's on to the next. Dude, it's on to San Diego or LA. That's it. Like, it's not about, oh, we beat Philly. Who gives a crap about Philly? Let them go back to wanting to fire Nick Sirianni. See, in New York, we fire our loser coaches. You hold on to them too long.
Can I tell you something? You just nailed something right there, though. This has never been about who are we beating to get to the journey. No, it's all about the World Series. Like, this team has been special. And I keep on going back to that because I felt that for a long time now. It's a team of destiny. So it doesn't make a difference how we get there. We're just going to get there.
Bye. I hope we're going to get there. I appreciate that confidence. But the Phillies are a nameless, faceless opponent.
Yes, they are.
As much as I take personal shots at them, I think it's just fun. But guess what? If we play the LA Dodgers in the NLCS or the Padres, we'll take shots at them too. But at the end of the day, it doesn't matter. It's just about getting to the ultimate location.
Even though Ranger Suarez is the face of the Phillies tomorrow.
So Ranger Suarez is making the start.
That's what they announced that before the game started. And
so no change.
No change.
Okay. I think what scares me about it is the possibility of having to go back to Philly and face Wheeler. And I think that's why, as a Met fan, that my perspective was, I hope they make that change. Because not that the Mets can't beat Wheeler and Philly. I think they can. Okay? I do think they can. But this feels a lot like the Arizona series in 99, where there's that specter of Randy Johnson in a fifth game in which, yeah, they can win. The Mets beat Randy Johnson, if you guys remember, back in game one in 1999. But it's the idea of, can they do it again? Like, it's not an ideal situation. We will be an underdog. So he's the looming specter in game five. We just got to beat Ranger Suarez and move on.
But let me just say something about Zach Wheeler. We didn't beat him in game one.
We did.
We beat the ball.
We outlasted Zach Wheeler.
Yeah.
That's a good point. And we sort of did that against Randy Johnson. Like, we scored a bunch of runs against him, but they beat Bobby Schwenard, I think, with a grand slam. But, no, you're right. Like, we didn't beat Zach Wheeler. We won the game Zach Wheeler started for two reasons. We got excellent pitching by Kodai Senga, David Peterson. Like, they did a great job in the bullpen. And we just destroyed their bullpen. Like, we outlasted Zach and got him out of the game. And, you know, I went on WIP today because they're desperate for content. So they put a loser New Yorker on. And while I was on hold, I heard their caller, like the Philly fan. And it was so funny. We're so different but the same. It was this senior citizen who was complaining that the Phillies took Zach Wheeler out way too early. And Joe Giglio, who's a good dude, I respect him, yeah, was like, he threw 111 pitches. What do you want? And I'm thinking to myself, he's right, but in a game five, he's probably throwing 120 pitches.
Well,
you know what I mean? Like, it'll be different in a winner take all game five.
Well, that's the whole thing I heard about Edwin Diaz. By the way, just hit Diaz for a second again.
Yeah,
everyone was complaining to me. Do you know how many pitches Edwin Diaz pitched in a span of like seven games? 135. I don't care. It's the playoffs, right?
Right. I think there's a difference between it's the playoffs and our season's on the line in this game. So, Edwin Diaz, game three against Milwaukee, sure, all bets are off, right? Edwin Diaz, game one or game two of the division series, trying to get that right, you're thinking long game. So I think that's what the difference is. In a winner-take-all game, like, who cares how many pitches you throw? You're not thinking about anything but saving your season. So I think that is the one difference. Want to do some emails?
Do some emails. Let's go.
All right.
No voicemails today, just emails.
Nance writes, we stopped Nola and the Phillies. You got to believe, Evan, my positivity has been working thus far. I'll be listening to the podcast tonight. That's positive, Nancy. She took Tommy's gimmick, ran with it, and she's very, very positive. This guy, Ralph, is upset that we're doing the Ricos right after the game. I want to read this one because it's an interesting point. Ralph writes, hey, Evan, I love the show and your excitement, but it's really hard for you to start the live Rico when you do, especially for these playoff games. If people are out watching or partying, they're going to miss your show completely. It's just something to consider. So here's the beauty about YouTube and our podcast. It's always there. So if you consume this live, and the only way to consume the Rico live is on YouTube, luckily, if you go to the WFAN page and it's 3 hours later because you're pissed drunk from being at the Met game, you can watch it. It's live for you. You know what I mean? Like, it's the same thing. A lot of our listeners download in the morning. They listened via the podcast format, and that's a day later or it's a few hours later. So The beautiful thing about doing them after games, whether it's a drive home, unfortunately I was not at the game today, or an instant reaction, is that if you can't listen or consume it live, it's okay. There's a lot of ways to consume the Rico Bruno.
What's this guy's name?
That's Ralph.
Ralph. I love Ralph. Ralph is treating the Rico like you treat Mets games. I can't miss it. I have to watch it in live time.
But you don't have to.
But Ralph doesn't know that. That's so this is why, Ralph, now you can do whatever you want. It's live to you at any time.
You know, it's so funny. I said this to Pete as we were recording. I said, I bet you will have less people watching live today because there's 44,000 people at the Met game.
It's a lot.
And that's fine. But that's the beauty of a podcast or whatever the hell the Rico is these days. Consume whatever you want.
Oh, you mentioned something too. That people complain that you're not at the game right now. What about tomorrow?
All right. First of all, about not being at the game. And let me call out your host, okay? Your guy. And yes, he's a friend, I guess, of mine too. I'm kidding. I love him. Sal Licata. Sal Licata, who gave me so much crap for missing my show on opening day. Okay. Missing it, which I was just a few hours late, and I got into a fight with my boss. Was very upset about it. Sal's texting me, how are you going to miss game four, Evan? Do a bit so that you can be at the game. I'm like, you son of a bitch. You gave me crap for opening day, and now you're guilting me into being at game four? Look, we have a job to do. I have a job to do. And being on the air is a great responsibility. And this was, believe it or not, for anyone who cares, the first Met home playoff game I have ever missed in my life. 1988, I was 5 years old. My dad didn't take me. That is literally the last playoff game at home that I've missed. Game five of the 1988 NLCS, in which I didn't understand what baseball was. Every game in 99, 2000, say, the whole thing. I know it sucks not to be there. Like, trust me, yeah. It was tough, man. But you got responsibilities in life. And I'm having a good time watching it with Pete. That was pretty cool. Doing this Rico here. Like, you got to make the best of any situation. As far as tomorrow's concerned, I'm very up in the air about it. Because I've had people say, you got to get there if the Mets have a chance to clinch. Like, what does that mean? If they're losing, I shouldn't try to go? Like, it should only be a situation in which they have a chance to clinch? I'm going to play it by ear, to be perfectly honest with you. My show ends at 6:30. Would I leave at 6 o'clock? Yeah, I don't think that's a big deal. We've all done that in the past. Craig used to do that all the time.
What are you talking about?
Nothing. Craig never did that. If I left at 6 o'clock and I got there at 7 o'clock, which is how long it would take, and it's 2 hours into what's usually a 2-hour, 45-minute baseball game, is that worth going to? I don't know. I got to think about it, to be honest with you.
If they're celebrating, you want to celebrate. You have to. That's the one thing I will say. To me, if you have an opportunity to be there to witness that moment, you got to be there. Because when's the last time we celebrated on Citi Field?
No, you're right. The answer, by the way, the last time the Mets celebrated a playoff at Citi Field. I'm sorry. First of all, they've never done that at Citi Field. So let me answer it that way. The last time the Mets celebrated clinching a playoff series at home. Are you ready for this? The National League pennant in 2000.
Oh, my God.
I swear to God. They clinched the division series in 2006 in Los Angeles. Obviously lost the NLCS at home. 2015, everything was on the road. Everything was on the road. They clinched the division in 06 at home, so if you want to count that, that's absolutely
right,
fine.
I remember Wright and Reyes with the cigars.
Yes,
right?
That was at Shea, absolutely. Cliff Floyd making the final out catch in left field. But in terms of a playoff series, I've only seen it three times in my life. 2000, National League pennant. 2001 hitter Bobby Jones. And Todd Pratt, 1999.
So maybe don't go. Maybe don't go. Maybe stay here.
You know what? I think if, for anyone who's worried about jinxes, I think if I make the decision tonight, I'm probably going to go. Mm-hmm. I'll probably, as soon as I can, just get in the car. I'll watch the game or watch it safely or listen to it. And I'm not factoring in the score. Like, if they're losing 5-0, I'm still going. Then I'm not jinxing anything.
Okay.
Because I'm going either way. By the way, I got to find this guy's email. So once I knew I couldn't go to these games, I sold my tickets. And I deserve to sell these tickets because as a season ticket holder, this year was a bloodbath. Did very, very bad financially. Not that anybody cares. So I'm selling the ticket to the highest bidder. Like, what do you want me to do? I load them on SeatGeek and that's it. The guy who bought the tickets figured out it was my seats and wrote me a very nice email about how he was honored to be sitting in my seats for this playoff game. And it was a very kind email, and I really appreciate it. But all I could think about was how much money he paid. I felt so bad about it.
Did you carve your name into like the seat somewhere? Is that how you figured it out?
People in when you're a season ticket holder, everybody's family. So everybody in 318, 317, we're all family. So I'll try to get to that email. Let me get to a bunch more. Rob writes, big win today, the entire team. It feels like everybody contributed. With that being said, it's time to look forward to game four. I think the idea of pitching Edwin Diaz in a seventh inning has gone and sailed. I don't care what the situation is. Let's roll the dice, bring in Buto or Peterson or anybody, but no Edwin Diaz in the seventh inning. Thoughts? I disagree. I still think that if the game is on the line in the seventh inning, I am choosing to have Edwin Diaz on the mound in the biggest possible spot. That's me. Alex writes, 27 outs to the NLCS. Pay Manaea, Alonzo Amet for life, Winker, Marte party, Taylor with the amazing defense. The only worry is our bullpen. Yeah, and a part of that is why I want Edwin Diaz in the biggest spot of the game. So, yes, I think the bullpen is definitely the biggest worry. You want to hear from Negative Dan?
Oh, I'd love to hear from Negative Dan. You can't go podcast without Negative Dan.
Can they close? All year, and even going back to just less than a week ago, this team's MO has been not stepping on people's throats and finishing a series when there's blood in the water. They can save seasons and salvage series better than anyone I can remember. But when they have someone on the ropes, they can't just seem to carry through with the knockout blow, which is why this whole season, I would say, they are addicted to putting their season on the line just so they can pull off the magic grimace rabbit out of their Haktua ass. It's absolutely insane to me that this team is one win away from the National League Championship Series, and I only have three letters that pop into my head when I think about this season and where they are. And it's not OMG. It's H-O-W. Wow. Look, in Negative Dan's negativity, he is right. This team, whether it's the regular season and what they caused us to have to go through, whether it's the Milwaukee Series, they have had a very difficult time of just finishing the job when they've seemed like they've finished it. I mean, they're up on the Brewers with a lead in the eighth inning. Finish the job. They go to Atlanta, win a game. They lose the one game. They go to Milwaukee. They lose two in a row. Finish the job. And look, he's right. The Mets' MO, if we believe that the Mets are going to continue their MO, they're going to lose at Citi Field on game four. And then they'll win game five out of their ass. That's that. So, look, ultimately, just get to the NLCS. I don't give a crap how you do it. But he is right. Their MO tells us they're not winning game four. That they're going to sweat us into a game five in Philadelphia.
All you got to do is win one. That's all you got to do. You did that with Brewers. You did that with the Braves for the doubleheader. Just win one. That's all we need.
That's it. Scott Stern writes, this is Pete Alonso's best four-game stretch of the season without question. You know what's funny, Scott? It probably isn't if we did a deep dive. But in terms of the need for what he's done, then yes, it's the best four-game stretch of the season because the season was over if it wasn't for Pete Alonso.
Yeah, I think he's batting .222 still, right? Like he's not really hitting the cup. He's hitting the cover off the ball when he hits the ball.
We have an email from Positive Tommy. He loves to chime in now with the emails.
He left?
I think he left. He was watching the game with us. And I say this about Positive Tommy. He does remain positive with the shtick or the gimmick or whatever it is throughout games. So maybe he's living the Positive Tommy lifestyle.
Maybe that's what we have to do.
Maybe it's not a gimmick. Maybe he literally is just positive now.
He's a happy guy. He seems happy.
Because if you're one of those radio hacks, and I'm not saying he is, but if you're a radio hack and you have a gimmick, you don't live it all the time. Tommy, to his credit, is living either the gimmick or he's legitimately that positive.
He seemed very positive today when the Jets news broke.
Well, that's because he's a trolling douche. That's the problem. Positive Tommy writes, the Mets did what they always do, and that's follow a gut-punching loss with a great win. What a night, what a moment. And now we are one win away from the National League Championship Series. I believe in the power of positivity. I believe in positive Tommy. I will lead us. Do you believe he's leading you, Pete?
No. But there's no storyline there? No, let's finish the story. Because there's a lot of stories, by the way, you do here.
There are a lot of them, yes.
Do you want me to go through it really quick or no? Is it we jumping too far ahead?
Give me the stories. Go ahead.
So, first of all, when the Padres beat the Dodgers, it's going to be revenge from 2022 for the Mets. And then when it comes down to any team in the American League, obviously if the Mets have to play the Yankees in the World Series, we know how that goes. It's just the Subway Series. The Detroit Tigers, we should have beat them in 2006. Boom. The Royals' revenge from 2015. Boom. Or the Cleveland Guardians, who Francisco Lindor, that's his old team.
So, okay, the Cleveland one I can't buy.
Why?
Because who gives a crap that they traded Francisco Lindor? He's ours now.
I know, but he didn't win with the Guardians or the Indians at the time.
I think it would be more them wanting to beat Lindor and us. But I'm with you about the Royals, obviously. I've said this before. I know most people don't agree with me. I think I'm more bitter about the loss to Kansas City than I am the Yankees.
Mm-hmm.
Like maybe the recency. Maybe I was older, so it felt more desperate. So I'm with you about the Royals. Obviously, the Yankees not going to get to that. It's obvious. The Detroit one's interesting. It's the should have been World Series from 2006. But yes, you're getting way far ahead of yourself. Jose Benitez. This is going to be a rough email that Jose Benitez wrote, but I do need to read it. He curses in it. So am I allowed to curse?
Yeah.
I'm going to clean it up. I'm not in a cursing mood. You effed up missing this game. I teach in Corona, and I waited around keeping busy after work in hopes of cheaper tickets. I check at 3:30, and I got seats in section 105 for $200, a steal. Like an idiot, I tried to find parking closer after work, only to find my exact spot on 102nd Street. 25 minutes later, and I took the 7 one stop. I caught a bit of you and Tiki when Positive Nancy called. Feel like since that moment, the stadium has been insane. I keep seeing how electric it is in here over and over. This isn't like 2022 when it was over before I bought my drinks in the Coke corner. Oh my God. I really hope you're here tomorrow. I sat next to a 12-year-old boy who was here for his first playoff game. Man, it was great. Hoping to be here tomorrow. I want to say, hey, if you're here, long time, long time. Jose, when you say you effed up, it makes me feel horrible. It does. I think that the decision I will make as this pod has gone on is I'm going to do my show. I'm not doing it. And I think at 6 o'clock, which is fair, you know, one segment early, I do admit, I will skip out. I will drive to Citi Field. Hopefully that gets me there in a reasonable amount of time, but you never know. Hopefully there are no presidential candidates in New York City. And I will plan on attending the latter part of game 4, win or lose. So it's no jinx. This is not about seeing them clinch. This is about at least being in the ballpark for a few innings. But I do have one problem that maybe somebody can alleviate. Do you know what that problem is? I don't have tickets. My tickets are gone. Now, I'm not asking for a free ticket because luckily – I have a press credential, and press credentials can get you in the building. Mm. But once I get in, where should I go? Is there anywhere to go? Should I go standing room in the 300s? Should I don't know what to do.
I got
to
be honest.
Any ideas?
This could be a really good angle. We could put a poll out, but this could be a really good show tomorrow of where should Evan celebrate.
Yeah, where should I go?
Like this section gets Evan Roberts celebrated.
Does someone have an extra seat? You don't have to send me the seat. All you got to do is tell me where it is and I can go in. Otherwise, I'm just, I guess I'll stand in the standing room area. I don't know.
Sal Licata's going to be there. You should go hang with him.
Yeah, but he doesn't have an extra seat.
No, but I mean, you could go in the press box.
He's going in the press box?
Yeah, whatever.
I thought he had tickets. Oh, I think he has tickets.
You're right.
No, Sal's got tickets for these games. Look, if he had an extra ticket, great. But I already sold them. And I don't have regrets about that. Because sometimes you got to put the drug away. You got to flush it down the toilet. Oh, boy. This was unbelievable. This was amazing. But we need one more victory. One more freaking victory to seal the deal. And I can't wait. And I hope we can. Tomorrow night. To start breaking down Padres or Dodgers. That's the dream. We do appreciate you listening. subscribing and downloading, whether you're listening live on YouTube or you're listening live on the downloaded podcast. We do appreciate it. You can download the Rico Bronya wherever you get podcasts, I guess. I don't know, Spotify, the Odyssey app, wherever you get podcasts. It's very much appreciated. Thank you very much to my fellow Ricoers. Let's go, Mets, and let's close this out tomorrow. Thank you very much for listening to Rico Bronya.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Rico Bronya podcast. It's amazing, isn't it? Make sure you download it now to keep it on you at all times.